I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's November 28th, 2022, to be rebroadcast on WHUS FM 91.7 and WHUS.org on November 30th of 2022. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, the lovely Dr. France Storch. She's goofing off. No, she's not goofing off today. She's actually out riding her bike. It's her birthday. Wish her a happy birthday on her Facebook page, if you don't mind. That would be kind of cool. If you're watching this on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment, and I may be able to respond. You never know. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, the bicycle advocacy, the bicycle industry, upcoming news in cycling, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to leave and or contribute information to the show, just drop it right down here on the bottom of this video. Or if you are listening to me on a podcast, it's Bicycle Talk, the numeral one at gmail.com. Let's see, what do we have here? You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, Spotify, and also iTunes, or your favorite podcast outlet. My rant of the week. This comes from the National Transportation Association, Pedestrian and Bicycle Safety. Livable communities that support bicycling and walking are a high priority of the U.S. Department of Transportation. Thank you, Pete. Very good. A livable community is one that provides safe and convenient transportation choices to all citizens, whether it's by walking, bicycling, transit, or driving. Each year, unfortunately, pedestrian and bicyclist fatalities comprise about 19% of all traffic fatalities, with approximately 6,000 pedestrian deaths and 850 bicycle deaths. Another 76,000 pedestrians and 47,000 bicyclists are injured in roadway crashes annually. These numbers have been rising recently, and this is unacceptable. No kidding. Pedestrian and bicyclist safety improvements depend on an integrated approach that involves the four E's: engineering, enforcement, education, and emergency services. The Federal Highway Office of Safety develops projects, programs, and materials for use reducing bicycling and pedestrian fatalities. All these materials can be found at highways.dot.gov/safety/pedestrian-bicyclists. So you can check it out and see what you think. You can see exactly what it is that they're doing, which is, it's kind of okay. You know, I think they're on the right track. But, you know, my rant is, why are so many people dying on bicycles and dying in crosswalks as pedestrians? It's the speed, stupid. That's what it is. It's all about the speed. We got to slow the traffic down. We've got to make the people inside of the motorized vehicles more aware of what's going on outside of the motorized vehicles, not so much the party that's going on inside the vehicles. That's it. That's my rant of the week. It sounds familiar because it sounds like I've said this before, because I'm going to say it a number of times over and over again. I'm not done yet. Not until things start improving and start focusing more in the direction of us, the bicycle people that are on the road and the people that are transporting themselves in other fashion other than a motorized vehicle. That's my sigh. Maybe I should start calling Ron's rant of the week Ron's sigh of the week. On a positive side, big shout out to Billy. Hey, good day, mate. Hi, Billy. You're out there. Too Tall Dujack and Laura Mullaly. Best wishes from Fran and I for speedy recoveries. I know you guys are getting better. You're getting better. It's good. It's all getting better. Cross Nationals coming to Hartford. Wow, it's almost a week. It's like a week away. Here we go. We're getting really, really close. Very, very good. I am shouting out on a positive side to all those who signed up to help. Very cool. I went over the list today. There's a lot of them that are filled. A lot of the jobs that are they're still requiring people to sign up for on the volunteer list. A lot of them are filled. I'm really, really impressed with that. The one that I'm doing tomorrow morning is completely filled, and the one that I am doing on Wednesday is also completely filled, which is really cool. These are setups for the race. There are still some setup dates available. If you want to do that, you can go to the Facebook page. And if you check my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you'll find a link that puts you over to the sign up for helping out with the race. Here's the big bonus on that. The big bonus on that is if you sign up to help, you're going to be given a wristband. That wristband will give you free entry to the cyclocross race. Or let me say races. I'll go over a little bit more of that deeper into the show and tell you exactly what's coming up as far as the lineup goes, that sort of thing. Mechanical minute and cycling tips. Why would you want a single speed bike? So the Tour de France founder Henri Desgrange famously banned geared bicycles from his race until 1937. How about that for a little piece of trivia you probably didn't know about? He still feels that variable gears are only for people over 45. Isn't it better to triumph by strength of your muscles than by the artifice of a derailleur? Well, let's give a thumbs up or two or tip of the cycling cap, whatever you want to do, to evolution. And Mr. Desgrange is probably no longer with us since he was the founder of the Tour de France. But things change, times change. Good thing, very, very good thing. Now we have gears. Gears are good. Gears are definitely good. But if you are looking to upgrade your old bike or you're looking to get a new one, there are five top benefits for choosing a single speed bike. Now, I have recently become connected to the single speed world. I had sold them for years because I used to work for Bianchi Bicycles, and Bianchi had a very extensive single speed range of bikes. And the single speeds, you know, they were all freewheel type bikes, but you could get fixies. They also had track bikes. They had fixies, and fixies went through their what am I going to call it? Their gravel grinder moment. Yeah, I said it. I did. So fixies went through their gravel grinder moment, and all of a sudden they were super popular and everybody had to have one. And then, you know, as the dust settled, things changed around a little bit. I'm not telling you that gravel grinders are going to go the route of fixies, but I think that there's something to be said for, you know, fads. I have been riding on a cyclocross bike since I really started getting serious about my cycling back in the race days, back in the 70s. And it's essentially the same thing, sort of, kind of, but not really, as a gravel bike. I think gravel bikes have their place. I think I probably have their place more so than road racing bicycles do. And that's a debatable moment there, what you can talk about, but, they're good. They're good. But, you know, anyway, so then we go back to the fixie. So why I talk about the fixie is because, there's a few things. First of all, if you're looking to upgrade that bike, you can upgrade an old bike, like an old, relic bike that you might have kicking around in your shed, barn, or garage or storage area. And you can make some modifications here and there. And before you know it, voila, you have a single speed bike. It's a pretty cool thing that you can do. And you can make this little single speed bike. So they're light because they have less gears, first of all. They have less gears in the front and in the rear. So that's kind of a cool thing. They are also easy to maintain and repair. I think they require air and oil. That's all I've really done to mine. I haven't done anything else. I had a creaking bottom bracket on it at one time, but that was easy enough to remedy. I just put a different one in. They're affordable. They are very affordable. There's not a lot going on there, so there's not a lot to have to pay for. So Yeah, they're pretty cheap. And of course, if you're resurrecting an old bicycle, they're even cheaper, which is kind of cool. And they keep you fit. Yeah, they do. They do. You got to work a little harder when you get to a hill when you got a fixie. So, or not a fixie, but a single speed. We'll get to fixie versus single speed here in a minute. But, and they also increase your concentration and agility because you got to kind of stay focused when you only have one gear to rely on. So that's a thing. Jed says, and hi, Jed. And if you run the fixie without brakes, no cables to maintain. Good point. And we'll get to that fixie thing next. That's absolutely true. So the fixies are direct drive and they are, well, they're like a track bike. And Jed knows all about track bikes because he races, still races track bikes, I believe. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. They, in order to slow down a bike that is a fixed gear, which means it does not freewheel, you have to sort of regulate or apply pressure to the rear wheel as you're not backpedaling. If you backpedal, you're going to be looking at the sky real soon, but, that's just not going to work, or you're going to, you know, do some serious damage to the leg. So you don't do that, but you can regulate your speed by simply applying pressure on the pedal in either direction. So it's kind of cool. So fixed gears, they make great winter training bikes. And that's why I'm bringing them up right now, because it is getting cold out there. And as it gets cold out there, you start looking at your alternatives. We talked last week a little bit about a few different things, or in the past weeks, I should say, like, you know, putting a pair of a pair of hiking boots on to keep your feet warm. Really works, by the way. Works really, really good. Put a big set of flat pedals on, go out, ride on a fixed gear bike. You're all set. You're all set to go. But personally, I still like my clipped in feet on my bike, and I really like to have, because I feel like I have a little bit more control of my bike with that. But that's beside the point. You can do it either way. You can do whatever you want. So they make great winter bikes, and they're also excellent urban bikes, providing you don't have to tackle any long steep hills. And this is a complete fixie. We're talking no brakes. Although I would put at least a front brake on, but that's just me. That's just me. The lack of shifters means there's one fewer distraction, and the ability to control your speed directly through a transmission gives you useful extra degree of control. You can build leg strength by using a single speed by climbing hills without the bailout of easier gears. All you have to get up to climb is what you got. It's what you got with your legs. So rather than spinning a bigger sprocket, single speed forces you to keep turning whatever gear you have and whatever strength there is in your legs. So what does this mean? It means that if you are looking to, and I know a lot of people do this in the wintertime, they're looking to build their leg strength so that when they get back out in the spring, if they have been spending time indoors, some people will do weights, and there are definitely different exercises and drills you can do to increase your muscular endurance and your muscular strength. It's definitely done with weights, not with bikes. I personally prefer to do as much of my strength training for my bicycling on my bicycle more than off of my bicycle. But that's me, and everyone is different. If you use a fixed gear though, or a single speed bike, you will find that you're going to be building a little bit different level of strength on your bike, and you're building specific strength, which is pedaling strength. So I've read a number of different things about from different trainers and coaches, and some of them just really say, you know, you've got to go to the gym, you got to put the work in the gym. And then I've seen others that say, yeah, you can go to the gym, you can do all that, but there's nothing that really will ever replace doing the actual sport that you're doing with added pressure to give you the weight benefit as far as that goes. So good morning, Pete. Good morning, Rick. Nice to see you guys on today. Let's move on to the content of the show. Here we go. It's never too late to sign up for nationals. Yeah, I know. I just talked about that. So there's a great sign-up sheet. I love this. That is set up. And once again, you will find it in my Bicycle Talk Facebook page. And there's a link there. And you can sign up. And you can become a volunteer at the national championships, which is really, really cool. So I'm trying to see where I buried it here, but I can't seem to find it now. So anyway, you can sign up to be a either helping with setup, or you can sign up and help with registration, or you can sign up and you can help with breakdown after the race is over. There's lots of jobs available, still available for nationals, including going and signing up and volunteering for a day or even a few hours of marshalling on the course to make sure that people stay on course, to help out in any way. The people from USA Cycling will direct you as to how to do that sort of thing. So, here it is. I knew it was here somewhere. So anyway, there's definitely some positions that are still open. I still see on the 1st of December, there's one position open between 8:30 and 12 p.m. for setup. That same day, it appears that there's also one position open from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. So, you got there. All these others I see full. This is great. This is amazing. It's awesome. I am so excited to see that people have stepped up and done this. Also, a big shout out to Volunteer Sign Up. There's a great website called Volunteer Sign Up, and super easy to set up an account there and put your event on there. So I think it's a great little piece, because it gives you it's kind of takes all the work out of it, basically, is what it does. Hopefully people will show up that are signed up. Hopefully they will get your notifications, and they will know that they are supposed to be there. When am I supposed to be there? Tomorrow I'm supposed to be there from, I think I signed up on Tuesday for 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. So I'm doing the afternoon. So anyway, I may get there a few minutes early. I might bring my cross bike with me, just because it might be cool to kind of check the course out, that sort of thing. And then on Wednesday, I'm signed up basically all day from 8:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. So it's great. So I see, 12-1, there's one position left open. That is it. All the others are full. And then set up again on 12-4 and on 12-5. So the 4th and the 5th, there are still only 3 slots left for sign up. Everything else is full. Full. Packet pickup is full. Course marshals, there's one position left for 12-5. And it's only in the afternoon from 12 to 4:15. So, there's just tons of jobs there. The gate is basically the way they set up the Hartford Cross Race is really cool, because what they do is they park you on the other side of the highway of 91 North South. And there is a pedestrian and cycling bridge which goes over 91. So you park on one side, and the gate basically is on the opposite side of where the course is, and that's where they will collect fees from you if you're paying to get in, or they'll check your wristband if you are a volunteer. That's always good. And but they are looking for some gate attendants, and it looks like my friend John is going to be there on the 5th. Very nice. Thanks, John. Very cool. So there's also a gate on lots of openings at the gate. There's still definitely some places left to be filled up there. The parking expo, we need people out in the parking lots. We still got a couple of positions left on the 5th and on the 6th. And then we get into all these packet pickups that are full, full. We got tons of volunteers going in there. Still need some help on the gate. The gate seems to be the big demand right now. Results runner. That's kind of an interesting job. You get to run back and forth between the finish line and to the we did it last time when on 2017 we did most of that work was done, I believe, upstairs in the boathouse. So that was kind of cool. But anyway, yeah, we still need some people. The gate seems to be the one spot, but a lot of these are filled. A lot of these are filled up. Parking Expo, again, course marshals. That's a big one. We need a lot more course marshals. There's 12 spots open on the 8th. There's another 13 spots open on the 8th. And there are breakdowns of times here. So you don't have to spend your entire day doing this. You just do the segment of time which is available. So anyway, very good, very good. So I'm looking down the list and everything is looking good. Again, it seems to be the gate and the parking and the course marshals are the only things that are really left at this point on the during the actual race itself. And then I believe that we're looking at breakdown, parking expo. I'm not seeing any. Oh, cleanup. Yeah, there's some cleanup positions that are still available too. Cleanup, teardown stuff. So there's still definitely plenty of things to do if you're interested in getting involved and helping out at the Nationals. It's a big deal. It's the second time we've had it here in Connecticut, which is exciting for us. It's also at the same venue as we had before. I also have left you a link on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page to a Ride with GPS map, which shows you the actual course, which is really, really cool. And there's lots of available times there, and there's also lots of information out there. And I even have a map, which I printed it out over here, so I have something to look at when I'm out there tomorrow. But it's also all GPS'd out because Dave did a really good job with that. So pretty cool stuff. It's really neat that they've got that much into it and set up at this time. And Riverfront Recapture, a big tip of the cycling cap for getting involved in this and making this all happen. They jumped on it pretty early. Nobody else really responded, and USA Cycling handed it right over to them. So this is where our Nationals are going to be. It's going to be a great time. It's just going to be a great time. So I hope to see some of you out there that are listeners of my podcast and radio show. That would be a really cool thing. Love to see more of it. Riverfront Cross, what's this right here? So we have some information here, and this is simply just you can go to Riverfront Recapture, which is at Riverside Park in Hartford, and they've put a lot into this. And when you go there, you can look at purchasing wristbands, volunteering, hotel reservations if you're coming in from out of town, media credentials, a vendor expo space if you're looking at to be there as a vendor, and then team space if you're looking to set up a team tent. And just to give you an idea here, I'm not supposed to mention prices, but I can tell you right now that your volunteering saves you a fair amount of money. I'm not supposed to say how much. So anyway, pretty cool. Definitely a thing that you want to do. Remember, it's December 5th to December 11th. And they are available online for purchase, or they are available at the Riverfront. Let's see, where is it? Riverfront Park, on Market Street in Hartford. So 410 Market Street. So wristbands also include parking in the lot at 410 Market Street. Excuse me, I didn't get that right. But yeah, you have to get that online. It looks like it's all an online thing. You could probably pay at the gate also, and they'll take care of you there. So, but you're going to a national event. This is a really, really big deal. And that part is so cool. And it's just such a great, great event and a great thing that we have here. And it goes on all day long for, well, not all day long, but most of the day for the days that we have, the 5 or 6 days that we have marked out for it. The course looks really, really interesting. If you take a good look at the course, you'll see a weird little dotted line that goes kind of like, looks like it goes right through a building. That's because it goes right through a building. It goes right through the boathouse. The boathouse at Riverfront Park is a boathouse for scullers, people who are paddling scull boats, and it's really cool. It's really cool. There's all sorts of boats in there that are stored there. They may even store the dragon boats there too. Those are these massive canoes. But anyway, if you take a look at the at the map, you can kind of see where everything goes. They stay away from that really, really, the really big dike that that is at the very far north side of the park. They're not on that. They're mostly on the side dike, the one that had the big slip and slide, if you remember back in 2017. We're going to be up and down that and across that a number of times. So there's a lot of wiggling back and forth on that. Lots of off camber. If you're not used to off camber, this is the time to hone in your skills on that one, because it looks like there's going to be a fair amount there to deal with. And then a couple of definitely a steep drop down and then a steep climb back up, followed by some back and forth. And my favorite, off camber, 180 degree turn, off camber, 180 degree turn. That's the way to run a cyclocross race. So you better get used to it, and you better get used to that feeling of, and I remember my friend Tom Stevens, who came out and did the Riverfront race the first time I ran it out there, and he was riding with a friend of his. I can't tell you what he said, but my name was attached to it, and his friend said, oh boy, you really got Tom here. Now, Tom is a premier course designer. He's a great guy. He's been in cross. He's been into the whole cross scene as long as I have. And yeah, he had some expletives, and my name was attached to it, because when you're dropping downhill on a really, really steep descent, and then you have to make a 90 degree turn on that downhill, and then you go to the end of an off camber and you have to do another one, it requires some skill. And he has that skill, and he was able to navigate it. But he did comment on it when I saw him a little later on. He goes, man, he goes, that hill thing that you put in, he goes, that was great. He said, and his friend said, that's not what you said when I was riding with you. And anyway, so it's all good stuff. It's cyclocross is a skill sport, as well as it's just a really, really difficult, high-level aerobic sport, too, at the same time. Good news is, no matter how hard you're going, you're going to be done in an hour. Now, bad news is, it's nationals. They're probably going to pull people if you don't stay at least up high enough to not get lapped. I'm always disappointed by that. I do not allow that at my race, but I have that ability to make the rules at my race. Whereas when you're dealing with a big UCI event or a big national event, basically if you get lapped, you're in the way, so they're going to pull you out. So make sure you bring your best fitness level if you are coming to race. And if you are not coming to a race, I highly recommend noisemakers. Cowbells are the best. It's a cowbell event, and it's an event you really want to bring as much noise as you can with you, because you'll lose your voice otherwise, because there's lots of yelling and encouragement and screaming and stuff. And there's a ton of places along the course, and that's why I would highly recommend getting there early too. Tons of places along the course where you can find it to be more difficult than other places, Those are great heckler spots if you're into heckling. Heckling is good. It's a good thing in cross. We're okay with it. If you want to heckle us on the hill because, hey, the last three guys rode through here, what's your problem? You know, that sort of thing. You can do that. That's good. It's all good. It's all good. I like having little heckler spots on the course. It encourages riders to ride maybe just a little over the edge of their ability and learn something from it, which is kind of cool. Just totally, totally cool. Yeah, there will be a fixed gear version here too, of course. But yeah, fixed gear on a cyclocross course. I never really put that all together until this year when I finally built myself a single speed. They don't do fixed gears on cyclocross courses. They do single speeds. I built myself a single speed cyclocross bike, and what a blast. It's really fun. And yeah, you work your tail off in some of those areas. You really have to anticipate better. You really have to think about how you're approaching different parts of the course when you only have one gear to choose from. So, and one gear is not a choice. Anyway, that's what you got. But you might want to check it all out. The map is great. There's little highlight points along the way. It shows you where there's sand pits. I believe I heard there was some sand that was shipped in, and it's back in the woods close to the river itself. That's kind of cool. That little addition, going through the boathouse. What a cool idea. Very, very cool. If it's an extremely cold day, there's going to be a crowd in there because people are going to want to get out of the wind because you're right on the river and it can be cold there. Oh boy, can it be cold there. So there's all sorts of really cool stuff. There are modifications in the course for UCI Pro level and I believe junior levels and maybe some of the regular racers, the general folks that are out there. I saw 1,100 people signed up already for nationals at Bike Reg, which is good. That shows that we definitely have some interest there. Hopefully that number will double in the next week or so. That's what I'm shooting for anyway. I'd like to see that. So it's a great event. It's a lot of fun. It's a big festival of sorts. There's food there. There's, you know, music playing. It's just really a fun thing and definitely worth your time to go out and check it out. The course, total course, appears to be 2.2 miles in length. So that's what we're looking at right there. And again, if you go to the actual website, you will see, you'll actually see the elevations and all, and you can get a really good overview. I like looking at it under the satellite mode in Ride with GPS because it gives you a really good view of the Connecticut River and downtown Hartford and the whole atmosphere that you're going to have around you. Very, very cool. So enough of that, I think. I think that's enough of that. Let's go back here and take a look at where we're at. So moving on, and I see my friend Kevin is on board. Good morning, Kevin. Very nice to see you there. It looks like Andrew is there and Wade is there. And so anyway, welcome to the show. Kevin and I have been talking because Kevin is involved in his town with a bicycle rodeo that he's putting on. So I thought maybe today we would talk a little bit about bicycle rodeos, because what the heck is a bicycle rodeo? Isn't a rodeo something you do with horses? Well, that's what they've been called. They've been called that for years. I'm not quite sure where that all comes from, but there are some basics and some guidelines that are out there that can help you with putting on an event like this. If you need more information on this, of course, you can go to www.safekids.org and look up Bike Rodeo Station Guide. And that will give you an idea of what's going on here. So bike rodeo, what's a bike rodeo? Bike rodeos are a great way for kids and their parents to learn about biking safety with practice. Kids bring their bikes and practice and develop skills that will help them become better bicyclists and avoid typical crashes. Some rodeos are designed as large municipal events with skills, activities, exhibits, and games, while others are much smaller, requiring less space, fewer resources, and a smaller number of volunteers. So what you have is there's a little checklist here. And let me see how long my checklist is here. Yeah, we got six different stations we're looking at here. So the first station, helmet check. Before a child participates in this event, you want to be sure that he or she has a helmet that fits or meets the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission standards. That is indicated by the presence of a CPSC label in the inside of the helmet. The coalition should determine in advance the policies for providing free or low-cost helmets and replacing helmets that are outgrown or damaged. No child should participate in the program without a helmet. Once the child has an approved helmet, you teach the three easy steps, the eyes, ears, mouth process, to make sure that the helmet fits and is worn correctly every time. Okay, so what does that mean? The eyes. Put the helmet on the child's head and have him or her look up. The child, and this goes for adults too, by the way, I see this all the time. The child should see the bottom rim of the helmet. The rim should be two fingers above the child's eyebrows and level with her head, his or her head. How many times have I seen people riding with a bicycle helmet and they got it pushed way back and there's no way that a forward hit on a forehead hit will be protected in any way. You want to be able to just take a gaze up, just roll your eyes up, and you want to be able to see the edge of the front of that helmet. If you do not see that, your helmet is not fitting you properly and needs to get adjusted. You can adjust the straps on the helmet so that it will pull that front down a little bit lower and stay put, and then you adjust the back straps also so there's equal pull, so the helmet doesn't bob around or anything either. And you want it to be a snug fit. So, ears. Adjust the straps of the helmet so they form a V right under each earlobe. So, I am, of course, on a video podcast here right now, so I am pointing right below my earlobes. But if you're listening to this, just reach up and grab onto your earlobes and then drop down just about a half an inch. And basically the center point of those two straps should meet right there. And that will give you a pretty good pull from both the front and the back and keep the helmet stable on your head. Once the straps are adjusted in the V, okay, you want to buckle it. They should be snug but not too tight. And be really careful here if you're putting on one of these rodeos, because you can pinch someone's skin super easy if you're not careful when you slide the buckle together. So just be sure that it should be snug enough so that they can, they can actually open their mouth as wide as possible and feel that helmet hug the head, and the strap should feel snug on the chin at the same time. Like a lot of the new helmets now have adjustments in the back, so you can also snug it in there to keep it from dancing on. You don't want it dancing on your head. It will not work if it's not sitting firmly on your head. So that's super easy. That's the next thing, is bike fit. That's your next station. The next stop is to adjust the bike to fit the child. Invite the bicycle shop employees to help you if you have a bicycle shop involved with this. For a bike, a child should be able to sit on the seat, touch both feet to the ground. As the child develops more confidence, the seat should be raised so that he or she can just touch toes of both feet and only one foot to the ground. That's a rough way of doing it. But yeah, that's essentially a good, quick, and easy. You definitely want to make sure, especially if you have a child who's brand new at this and they're really unfamiliar with being on a bike, I would keep the seat as low as you can do it and still make it so that the bike can be ridden, just because you want them to have a level of stability and comfort there too. So good morning, Bill. So station three would be a wheel stop and teaching children how to adjust their bicycles or scooters and to make simple repairs. So filling the tires with air, tightening all the spokes and replacing broken spokes, adjust the handlebars in the seat, replace flat tires, replace worn brake pads, tighten all screws, nuts, and bolts on the bike frame, check the chain to be sure it's secure, and check and clean the reflectors, mirrors, and lights. Oh, I've never done that before at a bike rodeo. But anyway, that's the thing. This is where you want to get on station three. You really kind of want to get your local bike shop involved. And this is why you support your local bike shop, because when you support your local bike shop, they're more inclined to get involved in community events because, you know, it works both ways. This is not rocket science. This is simple, simple stuff. So anyway, station four, following rules. Here's where it gets to be a little more interesting, because now we got kids on bikes. So we're going to teach them exactly how to handle their bike in situations. At this station, it's important to explain to kids how traffic works. This is a biggie. This is huge, huge, huge. We are out to in our town, but there are a number of other towns too. You can do it through Bike Walk Connecticut. They have a program where they'll actually even bring bikes out to your safety clinic for the kids. But the kids don't know the rules of the road. And yet we put them on a bike and send them out, right? Just send them out. Would we do that in another situation? I'm not going to try to compare anything crazy like firearms or anything like that, but you don't do these certain things without instructions. And it is absolutely as critical when you get out on a bicycle in the open, on the open road, and are dealing with traffic of any kind. I mean, we as adults, when we ride our bikes, we have enough concerns about that. Can you imagine putting your kid on a bike without any instruction and sending them out to ride their bike on the road? Nah, not really. Now, we did this years ago when I was young. That's what we did because we didn't know any better. But, you know, now we're getting a little smarter, hopefully. And, you know, when I was first getting in a motorized vehicle, there were no seatbelts either. So, you know, things have improved. Things have definitely improved. But anyway, what you have to do is you have to remind the kids that they have to follow the same rules as cars and buses and trucks, and be sure to mention the importance of riding with traffic, not riding against traffic. That's like super, super important. Left turns, extending your left arm straight out to your side. Right turn, extend your left arm out from your side, bent at a 90 degree angle. Don't like that at all, but there are people that still do that. I have found that if I've ever used that signal where I have done the elbow up and the hand going up, that the driver of the vehicle coming the other direction is very happy to wave back to me, because they don't know what you're doing. They have no idea. Right turn, point to the right. It's just be really... really firm with what you're trying to do on the bike. You want to keep that communication open. But you can do it either way. Alternate right turn is to turn right by reaching your arm out. The right turn with the elbow bent and the hand up in the air was designed before there were traffic blinkers and signal lights put on automobiles. How far back does that go? It's crazy. It doesn't really work. It's also something that a lot of motorcycle people are doing too. But, you know, you talk to any of them and it's just point. Just show them where you're going. Be firm. Be very, very clear with what you're doing. Stopping or slowing. I do this a lot because I'm on group rides and I like to let people behind me know that I'm stopping or slowing. I don't yell out stopping or slowing. I simply put my hand out and I run the palm of my hand facing backwards. And that's the way that I do it. If I am making a left-hand turn and I'm doing that, so I see a stop sign coming up or a stoplight and I'm going to make a left at that light and I want to indicate to the people behind me, I will do the stopping with my elbow pointed down and my hand pointed down, and then I will also point for 2 or 3 seconds, and then I'll go back to the stopping, slowing, and I'll point. When I'm slowing, I also simply raise and lower my hand in a level position, which kind of gets people the idea that I am slowing down. So anyway, these things are like super important. So And then, so that tells everybody, you know, how to handle themselves when they're on their bike, the kids on their bike. And then the last station? No, the next to last station here is riding right. Balance, have kids practice riding in circles as well as a straight line, show them how to use brakes, get them to skid the rear wheel just to get the feeling of it, not to wear the tire out or anything, but just to let them know that, oop, that was a little too much. Have them ride as slowly as possible without touching the ground. So doing the old slow ride, starting and stopping. They need to learn how to stop before entering a roadway. They need to look left and right and left again before proceeding. Remind them that driveways, sidewalks, and crosswalks are potential danger zones. Practice starting and stopping over and over until it seems easy. Riding straight, have kids ride their bike on a painted line in a parking lot. That's a great way to do it. If you can't do it with a painted line, just a little chalk line works pretty good too. If you can just put a chalk line down. And then I like to do a chalk line because then the kids like chalk their tire and then they get to see that they did it right. But that's an additional thing you can do. And you can get that type of powdered chalk at a hardware store. They sell it there. Reminding them that predictability is as important in any traffic situation. Kids don't know that. So if you remind your child or the kids that you're helping teach that they have to be as predictable as possible, it makes everyone a lot safer and it makes them safer too. Zigzag, you know, you put cones up and have them zigzag back and forth. You have a slow race. Mark start and finish lines. You may need a stopwatch. Children are challenged to ride as slowly as possible from the start to the finish line without touching a foot to the ground. The slowest rider wins. Very nice. Figure eight, use a sidewalk chalk or tape and outline figure eight that children must follow through their bikes. Make it large enough to allow children to safely make turns. Driveway rideouts. Use cones to create a driveway with a fence or a bush as a slight sight obstruction at the end. Create cardboard cars and ask children to volunteer to drive. Instruct children on bicycles to enter the roadway from the driveway. Be sure they stop and look both ways. This gets pretty intricate here. And then scanning, you're trying to get kids to really kind of work on the old eyes behind the head type thing and make sure that they have a good idea of what is surrounding them as far as that goes. Station six is safe places to wheel. And it says here, it's often hard for drivers to see bicyclists and skaters. I didn't see him. The most frequent reason a driver gives after crashing into cyclists. That's why children should know what they can do to see and be seen. First, parents and children should know how to incorporate equipment for visibility, reflective material, bright clothing, reflectors on the bikes, lights on the bikes. A front light, I think, is a great thing, as well as a rear light. The flashing ones are always best. Telling them not to ride when it's dark. If they got to get home from school and it's dark, they're going to have to ride in the dark. So they're going to have to learn how to deal with that. And they're going to have to be properly lit for that. Teach children about different things that they may need to watch for drivers of wheeled vehicles. Be sure they understand the following types of hazards. Moving hazards, cars, pedestrians, dogs, other cyclists, trains, trucks, buses, motorcycles, or anything else that could cross your path. Stationary hazards, parked cars, utility poles, park benches, fire hydrants, fences, parked bicycles, or anything else would be in the way. Surface hazards would be potholes, rocks, drain grates, concrete joints, raised manhole covers, broken glass cans, other roadway litter. Visual hazards, bushes and shrubs, fences, parked cars, buildings, large or flashing signs, and other things that could either block the view or distract attention. So you set up a course that is often referred to as the rock dodge. Use chalk or masking tape to create a narrow lane for bicyclists to remain in. Then use soft sponges to serve as obstacles for children to avoid. Tell the riders to travel straight toward the obstacles and steer around them at the last minute. They must remain in the narrow space, 3 to 6 feet wide for kids 10 or older, and 6 to 12 feet for kids under 10. And they practice steering their way around the obstacles in front of them. These are all things you can do to put together a really nice bicycle safety bicycle rodeo. And these are the station guides which you would use in which to put this together. Once again, you can find this at safekids.org. And you'll find all the information that I just spoke about right there when you look up your bike rodeo station guide. So neat stuff to know, especially if you're thinking about putting an event like this on in the future. If you want to know how to get involved in your community and help your community out, this is a great way to do it. You know, I talk about this after every show. It's really, really important to get involved, because when you get involved, you start to understand more. One more thing I'd like to add on to the bicycle safety and the, Kevin says he's gonna have a beanbag toss as well. So he's putting some fun into it. That's great. Have a little fun too. Don't forget, you know, they're just kids. So we have attention span issues, and we have the thing where if it's just not fun, they're just not gonna want to do it. So you want to make sure that you add that fun aspect in. Thanks for that. Thanks for that extra. That extra little piece there. I'm not sure what doesn't work in Britain, Wade, but you can let us know on your comments there if you don't mind. Anyway, I may also be missing a conversation which is going on with some of the other people in the on the site right now, just so you know. So let's see here. What else do I have here on the list? We got a few more things. Matthew Vanderpool in cyclocross is back. He's back. Oh, I know what I was going to mention something about. The one thing that I like to encourage people to understand, I tell adults this, I tell kids this, I tell everyone this. Remember, when you're riding in traffic, the traffic that is coming at you, going around you, turning, whatever it is that they're doing, they are not looking for you. They are looking for another motorized vehicle. They get to an intersection. The first thing they're doing is looking for the biggest thing that could hit them before making that right-hand turn right into you, because you're in the wrong place at the intersection. So this is like, this is really, really critical. And it just remember, they're not looking for you. No matter how bright you are on the road, no matter how many lights you have all over your bicycle, they're really not looking for you. They're looking for other motorized vehicles. People, friends of mine who ride motorcycles tell me this all the time. That is a common issue. And that's how they get hit. They get hit by drivers of motorized vehicles that are not looking for motorcycles. They're looking for other cars or trucks. And that's how it happens. So that's another little critical piece to add on to that little bike rodeo safety thing that I just talked about. But anyway, move on. Matthew Vanderpool comes back, decides he's going to race a little cyclocross. Remember Matthew, right? That's where he started out. He's a great cyclocross racer. And so he came back last weekend, and he, you know, he's been through a lot of long tours and different things. He comes back and he wins the Hulst World Cup race last weekend, and a broken rim on the last lap denied Tom Pidcock the podium place. So Tom Pidcock was up there too. All the superstars across are returning back to that wonderful off-road thing that we call cyclocross. And They kind of look at it as fun in comparison to sitting on a saddle in a Grand Tour and racing over mountaintops in record-breaking time, because they're only there for an hour or less, and then the race is over, so they're done. So anyway, Matthew Vanderpool made a winning return to cyclocross with a dominant victory at the Hulst World Cup. After starting down the grid, Vanderpool swiftly recouped to the ground and then proceeded to draw away from world champion Tom Pidcock with a little under two laps remaining to build a decisive lead. So anyway, Pidcock, which was the winner of the X10 Trophy Kortchik on Saturday, still had Vanderpool about in his sights when he took a bell, but the Britain's race was over with a broken rim on the final lap, and he was denied the podium place because of that. So, you know, it happens. Things break. Very unfortunate. Why would you break a rim in a cross race? You'd have to slam something pretty darn hard to do that. Or be riding on some pretty incredibly light equipment. So, who knows? Who knows? But anyway, Vanderpool, who obviously was taken out of cross last year by a back injury. He just really couldn't get any of his strength back, and he was really in a lot of pain. He's back now. He said, on the technical side, I made a lot of mistakes, but I think that's normal. For me, in cyclocross, it's been a really long time, so I'm just really happy to be back. It feels pretty good. It's been a long while since I've won a cyclocross race. And he said last year wasn't a good season. He said he can't even call it a season because he did 1.5 cross races due to a back issue. So anyway, interesting to hear him say on the technical side, I made a lot of mistakes. He'll get it back. He's a natural. He's totally a natural. And of course he's got this incredible, incredible fitness level. So anyway, that's it. I am running out of things to talk about, and not really. I've always got things to talk about. But I will mention now we're going right into events, and we have on December 3rd, the Ice Weasels Cometh. That is a classic cross race here in New England in Southwick, Massachusetts. On December 4th, it's the Governor's Guard Rodeo, and the Governor's Guard Rodeo is the last of the Connecticut series. Remember that the bicycle game is now open in Hartford. If you want to go to the Connecticut Historical Society, you can check it out. It's at 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. And look them up online if you want more information. Also, you should see a poster too on my Bicycle Talk page. Let's see, what else do we have here? 2022 USA Cycling National Cross Championships from December 6th, December 11th. Hope to see some of you out there. I'm going to try to do a few short live broadcasts out there, podcasts out there. You know, just now that I'm starting to figure out this whole video thing. Although not great, but I can still get out there and I can have some fun with it. So keep your eyes on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page for further posts and videos about cross nationals, because I will be there. Finishing points. We are shouting out always to Tall Billy and Laura Mullaly. Hey guys, get better, get out there. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when you're presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate. Participate. Ride your bike and tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it one day and use your bike. Just one day a week. You might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host today, Fran Storch. Happy birthday, though, Fran. Happy birthday. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, and the bicycle business and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can leave comments down here, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good week.